Howdy, my good friends. Welcome back, and thank you for stopping by on this Christmas day. My apologies, like I said, for missing the show last week. I had a bit of a sinus situation going on, and I was working on a project that actually took me to places I didn't think I was going to end up going and getting back from, but I had a scratchy throat, wouldn't have sounded any account anyway, but here we go. Christmas looks a little bit different than it did in the days of early Appalachians, but there's some of our traditions that we can trace directly back to those early Christmas days. Now, with it being the Christmas season and all, I thought I would talk about some Appalachian Christmas traditions, some of which I've heard about and experienced firsthand. So have a sit down and I'll go over a few of them for you. First tradition we're going to talk about is the observance of Old Christmas. You still hear some old timers talk about Old Christmas. My grandparents did. They used to try to tell me about it when I was a little feller, but for the most part I was too far into the presents to understand much of it. What I'm talking about here is a little more than leaving your decorations up to July 4th and pretending they're Independence Day decorations, or putting Easter eggs on a needleless Christmas tree that's been up since 2 days before Thanksgiving, just to try to pass it off as some twisted-up Easter decoration. Yes, I've witnessed both of those firsthand. Now, when the settlers were moving into the mountains, Old Christmas was just the day they celebrated Christmas. The date was January 6th, and that was different because of a change in the calendar to a new one in the 1500s. It took hundreds of years, really, for the whole world to adopt the new calendar, and took Appalachian settlers even longer because the New World was discovered and folks started migrating to it right in the middle of it all. But despite it all, most folks had adopted the calendar by 1800s, but still used Old Christmas as a way to stretch out the celebrations. That, my good friends, is where we get the 12 days of Christmas. You might have also heard it called Little Christmas, Green Christmas, or 12th Night, or even Epiphany. It all came to be when the big talking heads of the day decided to change the calendar. But we also have Appalachian superstitions that go with Christmas. Now, we who live here in the Appalachians have a superstition for just about everything you can think of, or at least it seems that way. You can get all stocked up on bad luck by leaving your hat on the bed, breaking a mirror, or leaving through the door you didn't enter through. Of course, if you let a black cat cross your path or see a raven on your roof, you're as good as dead. Most folks outside these mountains just think we're all crazy, but to understand why folks believe these things, you have to first understand where they came from and where they wound up. A whole bunch of these folks were from Scotch-Irish heritage, which in itself was well steeped in superstition to start with. One thing that is often overlooked about early settlers of the mountains is that they were highly keen observers of their surrounding, maybe just a little bit too keen. They were, after all, in a new, unfamiliar world and didn't know what to expect. If they noticed something bad happened after something preceded it, they simply made note of it to avoid doing that in the future, and they didn't really even know for sure if a preceding event had anything to do with the tragedy that followed. But out of that came a laundry list of what is now called superstition. Aside from that, Christmas has its own sets of superstitions here in the Appalachian Mountains. For instance, if you find a cricket on your hearth, don't kill it. It's good luck. So I reckon Santa Claus might see the smashed little feller and think he's going into the house of a serial killer and just might ease back up the chimney and leave folks twisting in the wind there. But some folks will tell you that animals talk at midnight on Christmas. I've heard that one since I was a little feller too, but have yet to witness it. I've tried to have an intellectual conversation with the late Mr. Bubbles one Christmas at midnight, and he pretty much looked at me like most people do any time I try to have an intellectual conversation, like I'm as full of shit as a Christmas turkey. But he didn't actually say that, but I could tell what he was thinking. The only explanation for that one I could come up with is it came maybe from the bottom of an empty jug that started out as a full jug of what we affectionately call white lightning. I'm sure that I'm probably wrong about that, but I'll keep poking around and find out. And then we got fruitcake. Yeah, you might think fruitcake is more of a joke than a real gift or a tradition today, but early Appalachian folks thought a fruitcake is a delicacy. Fruitcake just so happens to be a term most mountain folk used when they were actually referring to apple stack cake. Today, that very cake recipe is still considered a treat by many who live here in the mountains. Even though I do know how it does take over 12 hours to make it, because my grandmother used to make it for us all. And her recipe is one that I wish I'd have got before she passed away. And I may not know how to make it, but I can tell you this much, I sure as heck know how to eat it. And it just so happens that eating fruitcake was one thing that me and my late mother shared at every Christmas, and one of the things that I still miss about her. I always eat a piece in her memory. Candles in the window. This tradition is pretty prominent throughout all of Appalachia even today. Mountain folks had a pretty good reason for placing candles in the window. Well, they just plain needed to see, and a windowsill was about perfect height to set the candle and light the room up. It wasn't too long before a candle in the window became a sign to folks outside that people were home, still up, and ready to have a visitor or two if by chance one would show up. Thus, the term "put a candle in the window and I'll be home" was born. The old rock and roll group Creedence Clearwater Revival did a song many of you may remember. I know I do. It was called "Long as I Can See the Light," which is about a candle in the window. Nowadays, candles are LED, electric, or even battery-powered and come in about as many colors as you could dream up. My grandparents considered it an important Christmas tradition to light up the windows with candles, and light them up they did, in every window of the house. Heck, they'd have the candles in the windows before they had the Christmas tree up. Serenading is another tradition. This one, folks, is now called caroling. Serenading, as it was known then, was a more of a sneaky practical joke of a Christmas tradition. Back then, serenaders would sneak up on their friends' or neighbors' homes and start with the singing, and heck, if they couldn't sing, they'd just plain yell. If they surprised the family, mountain courtesy dictated that they deserved some kind of a Christmas gift or treat. Kind of like Ding Dong Ditch combined with Trick or Treat, I'd say. Today, many people in the mountains still drive around singing for their neighbors, but for the most part, there's a lot less sneaking around. But you still sometimes get yourself a treat or so from the so-called victim. Maybe cookies, hot chocolate, or if you're lucky, a piece of real fruitcake. Then you have mistletoe as a tradition. Now, mistletoe is a common decoration for folks all across the Appalachian Mountains and actually all across the country nowadays, but mistletoe was especially popular in old Appalachia because it was so easy to find. I don't know how many of you good folks have went out hunting mistletoe, but it grows on trees all over the Appalachian Mountains, and it's easy for people to pull down, either by climbing up a tree or, the way I usually did it, by shooting it out with a shotgun full of birdshot. You just walk around hills until you see something in the trees that looks a bit like a squirrel's nest and blast it right out. Now be sure you take a pair of binoculars to make sure you're not actually shooting a squirrel's nest, though. I know you're thinking the same thing I am. What the heck? Backwoods mountain pervert started with the kissing under the mistletoe. And I can answer that one by saying it didn't happen that way. Well, not this way, this time anyway. It started with something that I never thought we'd talk about on an Appalachian podcast. Norse folklore. And in old Norse legend, Frigga, the goddess of love, and had a son named Balder. Frigga demanded that all creatures and even inanimate objects swear an oath not to harm him, but she forgot to include mistletoe. Just a slight oversight on her part. That's when Loki, the god of evil and destruction, figured out how to make an arrow out of mistletoe. He then tricked Hoth, Balder's blind brother, into shooting the mistletoe arrow, which ended up killing Balder. Frigga's tears fell onto the mistletoe and turned into white berries. She decreed that it should never cause harm again, but should promote love and peace instead. From then on, everybody standing under the mistletoe would get a kiss. This all came over with our Norse friends when they came to the New World and settled in these old hills. This just goes to show that what a mix of history dwells in the Appalachian Mountains. I'll be right back. You're listening to Appalachian Murder, Mystery, and Legend with Larry Bentley. Our next tradition is one we can all get behind, getting a Christmas tree. Now, for years, folks in the U.S. thought of Christmas trees as some kind of pagan ritual steeped all up in Satanism and wanted nothing whatsoever to do with it. It was along about 1830s, when enough German immigrants had been celebrating Christmas with trees for hundreds of years, began to rub off on other folks who finally didn't see anything wrong with decorating a tree. People in old Appalachia didn't go out to a tree farm and find the trees, and they sure as heck didn't buy artificial ones either. Heck, there wasn't any Christmas tree farms until the first one opened in 1901 as a way to make use of, or just some kind of use out of farmland that just wouldn't farm. It wasn't until the late 30s or 40s that folks started thinking that it might be a whole lot easier just to go get one from a farm and than trying to find a good one in the Appalachian Mountains. Even though pine trees grow in abundance all over the Appalachians. Trust me when I say it ain't easy to find the perfect Christmas tree when you go out looking. But the first artificial tree came in 1930 from the Addis Brush Company that was looking for a way to use the components of their brushes, which were faltering in sales, to create a new stream of income. They just hooked a bunch of brushes together in the shape of a Christmas tree and painted it green, and the rest is history. But for early Appalachians, they tried to make it as easy as possible, so they stuck to the trees that they saw around them, which usually ended up being a cedar tree. Ornaments were usually made from whatever they had, like pine cones, popcorn, corn shuck figures, and they'd sew candy into a piece of fabric that made a long strand to decorate the tree like tinsels used today. Later on, the children would get busy opening the fabric up to get the candy out as part of the Christmas. Nowadays, we got tree farms everywhere you look, and artificial trees that are pre-decorated, laminated, corrugated, fried, dyed, and laid to the side in every color under the sun, made up of everything from aluminum to something called recycled material. They're height fit, pre-lit, just set them up, and that's it. Of course, you'll have to take some of your precious holiday time to plug the thing in, but I'm sure there's some mastermind working on a way to eliminate that hassle. Heck, that might be something new for the 2023 Christmas season. And by then, there might be one that jumps right out of the box, scans the room for the proper location, and walks over and just decorates itself. By then, maybe. But can you imagine one of us hillbillies watching that happen without shots being fired? Yeah, I can't either. Then there's a tradition of gifts and presents. Most people who celebrate Christmas all around the world swap some kind of gift. Hence the joke of regifting the store-bought fruitcake was born, which is thought to have an infinite shelf life. But I myself wouldn't doubt for a minute that some of those monstrosities they call fruitcake would have an infinite shelf life. The gifts children in the old Appalachian Mountains got were nothing like what we'd think of today. In the old days, a stocking was hung above the fireplace on the mantle and was pretty much just a child's biggest sock that was actually worn. It hung there waiting on a treat or two from Santa. Those socks back in the day were hand-sewn stockings. Santa Claus would drop by and fill them with oranges, which were a very rare treat in the mountains, apples or walnuts right off the trees of the family farm, along with some homemade candy. I always heard that it depended on how good you was as to whether or not the nut walnuts would be cracked for you. Of course, there was always the hanging threat of finding a lump of coal and some pre-made, prefabricated switches in a stocking if you didn't cut it with a fat man. It was also common in coal mining towns to hold community celebrations. Here, each child received a present. Maybe a doll, a sack of fruit or candy, or fresh homemade cookies. A whole lot of time, they would have special music playing during the celebrations. Music included a dulcimer, fiddle, banjo, and guitar, amongst maybe a few other instruments. Music wouldn't be what we hear today. Those instruments would produce tunes with a Celtic ring, what with most folk, mountain folk of the day being Scotch-Irish and all. The only thing you could might compare it to today is Mannheim Steamroller minus the rock guitar. But, then, folks, there's a tradition of telling the Christmas story. Now, being that Appalachian Mountain folks are the, for most part, Christian, and you might say a bit knowledgeable about the Bible, don't think for a minute you're going to get through the holiday season without hearing the story for the reason for the season. Even still today, it's common for folks of the mountains to spend a part of Christmas Eve reading the Christmas story from the Bible with their family members gathered all around to listen. In Appalachia, it was usually the patriarch of the family that read the verses, and those verses usually came from the story as told in the Gospel of Luke. When I was a little feller, it was my great-grandfather who did the honor of reading the Christmas story, which, excuse me, according to him, would have to happen before anything else because it was the most important that ever is most important to him that we knew why we were here to start with. I'm only sorry, folks, that I can't even begin to find the words for how that went, other than to say that, what with him being the patriarch and all, he would be the one to ask the blessing at the table when we ate, which turned into a 30-minute sermon of everything from the devil tempting man to the horrors of the hell fire, all done with the gusto of a Pentecostal preacher, complete with the jumping, hollering, and pounding on the table. That ought to give you a pretty good picture of how the Christmas story went. Usually ending with the phrase that television is the Antichrist and will be the end of man. Once he was done, we would all go over and turn the TV on, watch Charlie Brown and Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer while he sat there giving us that I tried to tell you look. What with him being born in 1875, I think his head would explode if he could see the cell phone today. Nowadays, the Christmas tradition of telling the stories is a whole lot tamer, at least around our house it is anyway. But it's a tradition that lives on in the Appalachians. Helping folks who are in need is another one. Probably one of the most enduring traditions from the folks in Appalachia is that their propensity for helping people in need. Most of the folks who settled in these mountains received their land grants from the U.S. government's payment for fighting in the Revolutionary War. They were given about 160 acres of land to call theirs. And folks, that's a heap of property. What they were quick to realize is that it wasn't easy to make it. The U.S. has one of the most vast variations in climate of any country in the world. There's, for instance, about a 60-degree average difference from summer to winter. That's in itself could catch a mountaineer napping if he wasn't ready for it. Then there was the problem of what's a man going to eat whilst he's waiting on his crops to grow. That is, if there was a good growing season to start with. Thank God the mountains provide to those who know where to look and how to hunt. What soon developed is a camaraderie among those living in sparse communities where if one saw another suffering, they would step in and help any way they could. After all, most of the folks living in the mountains had hit rough times at one point or another, knew how it felt, and knew it could easily turn into a life of death struggle in fairly short order. Now, that being said, Appalachian folk are a proud bunch and saw a handout as weakness on their part, and they really didn't want everybody to know about it. Folks would cook or bake for neighbors in need and invite them into their homes if they had nowhere to go, and they used Christmas as a way to let the needy people keep a little bit of their self-pride. Today, holiday donations come in droves from food pantries and toy drives all across the Appalachian Mountains, and across America, for that matter. Upholding a long-standing tradition of love thy neighbor as thyself. Well, folks, that'll do it for season 2 of Appalachian Murder, Mystery, and Legend. I'll be out for a little bit getting ready to start season 3, which will be coming up toward the end of January. I hope you enjoyed our story today. If you have, please rate and review the podcast, and don't forget to follow us to get notified of new episodes. Come join us on Facebook group Appalachian Murder, Mystery, and Legend Podcast, where we talk about just about everything Appalachian and whatever else comes up. I'll be back in a few weeks with a start of Season 3 of Appalachian Murder, Mystery, and Legend. Please watch the feed for upcoming announcements. And, heck, maybe a word or two from old Huskel T will be in there, too. Merry Christmas, folks, and Happy New Year. I'll see you soon.